This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. When a private donation and plans for a new foundation were announced to help stabilize the city of Kalamazoo's finances and address long-term problems, it did not take long for comparisons to be made to the Kalamazoo Promise. Michelle Miller Adams is the author of two books about the Promise and other scholarship programs. She's also written a book on helping people out of poverty. She's a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo and a political science professor at Grand Valley State University. Michelle Miller Adams, thank you for being here again.
Thank you for inviting me.
So, I think our listeners by now know that you have studied extensively the Kalamazoo Promise, as well as some of the other scholarship programs which have come about as a result. What similarities do you see between the Kalamazoo Promise and the Foundation for Excellence that the city of Kalamazoo is trying to get started?
Well, you've put your finger on one of the most important ones in your introduction, and that this is, and that's a private donation that comes from wealthy individuals within our community, and it is not something that there is any indication these donors want to manage or be involved in any kind of hands-on way. So I think of it as kind of both the Kalamazoo Promise and the Foundation for Excellence are large, quite open-ended philanthropic commitments where the donors have essentially handed off responsibility for the operations to existing entities. In the case of the Kalamazoo Promise, it's the Kalamazoo Promise Scholarship Organization. In the case of Foundation for Excellence, it is the city. Another similarity is that both contributions, both donations represent investments in the urban core of our region. The Kalamazoo Promise funds are directed to graduates of the Kalamazoo Public Schools, which is the school district that serves our urban population, most of our low-income kids, most of our minority kids. The Foundation for Excellence is a donation directed to an even smaller entity, the city of Kalamazoo itself, which is, again, the urban core of our region, the home to many of the low-income folks in our community and many of the minority families. Their goal, I think, is similar, which is a goal of increasing the attractiveness of the city on the one hand and the school district on the other hand, strengthening those systems, making them better able to retain and attract new students, new families, new investment, new businesses. And both of them, I think, embody a combination of economic development and poverty alleviation motivations, which we can get into a little bit later. They are both very long-term investments. These are, I mean, in some sense, the Foundation for Excellence is a quick fix. It's a quick fix of some urgent, immediate problems. But these are both longer-term investments that are people are counting on to endure through generations, essentially. And they're going to depend on the support of the community to make them work. So I think those are some key similarities between the two investments.
And if you had to point out some important differences, what would those be?
Well, one important difference is the nature of the investment. The Kalamazoo Promise, I think of as a human capital investment, money that's committed to help enrich the human capital of young people in our region. The Foundation for Excellence may have some human capital components, but it's also definitely going to have some infrastructure components as well, as the city uses it to close the gap in infrastructure spending that has opened up over the years, as well as what is already, I think, quite well known about the Foundation for Excellence, which is a reduction in the property tax rates that are paid by homeowners in the city. Another important difference is that the Foundation for Excellence donation is not an anonymous donation. I have heard rumors that the donors perhaps wanted it to be anonymous, intended it to be anonymous, but that isn't really workable when you're donating money to a public entity. There are Freedom of Information Act rights and rules that govern knowledge about where your public funding is coming from. So the fact that it's not an anonymous donation does open up some potential for conflicts of interest, which I don't think are going to arise, but certainly have been discussed in the run-up to this. Another really important difference is that the Foundation for Excellence is providing funding for something that the public sector is supposed to provide, fixing our roads, investing in infrastructure, keeping property tax rates at a reasonable level. And the Kalamazoo Promise is different because as much as I think it's critical to our community's future, it is kind of an add-on. The public sector does not have a commitment to allow students to go to college tuition-free.
Every city has roads to deal with, but it's not necessarily the case that any school district before 2005 was really setting up a scholarship program. There were a few maybe, but not very well known and not in the way the Kalamazoo Promise was doing it.
Right. I should add, going back to similarities for a moment, that both of these investments are hugely innovative. They are really kind of first in the field. There were a few precedents for the Kalamazoo Promise. They were quite small. They were not well known. But both this private funding directed toward a city and the scholarship funding through the Kalamazoo Promise are hugely innovative and provide potentially very powerful models to other communities.
I noted that you've written a book about, of course, you've written two books on the Kalamazoo Promise, and you also have a book about trying to get people out of poverty. That is one of the stated goals of the Foundation for Excellence. How would you say if you take that money and you're going to try, you know, it's not going to be all of it, but you're going to take some of that money and say, okay, we want to move people out of poverty. And obviously, you know, it would seem to me that the goal there is to move them into a position where they can hold a job or they can, you know, pay their own bills, et cetera. What's the way to do that? What are the programs that you would want to put in place?
Mm-hmm. So I don't have really specific answers to that. It's not really my place, and I don't have the power to make those specific answers come true. But I have thought a lot about some sort of guiding principles when it comes to the use of the money. There are many programs that work to alleviate poverty and to build human assets, economic assets for low-income individuals and communities. And one of the great things is that we, as a field in social science, we know what works. The federal government keeps something called a What Works Clearinghouse. Really tough to get in there if you're a social program. You have to meet extremely high standards of causality and evidence. There are nonprofits that focus on evidence-based change. Rigorous evaluations have been done of many programs that are set up to address poverty. So it's not like we don't know how to do it. One of the problems is that many of these programs cost a fair amount of money. And to the extent that they've been tried in our community, they are often quite partial. There are very few slots available. They are underfunded. I'm thinking, for example, about a program called the Nurse Family Partnership, which we have here in Kalamazoo County. It's thought of as a highly effective strategy for getting low-income parents, low-income mothers with new children on a path towards success for their children, school readiness, better financial outcomes. It is a program that works, but it is a program that doesn't reach everybody who needs it. Another program where there is a lot of evidence about the importance of it and how to do it right is childcare and preschool. So we have expanded preschool slots in our community, but we are certainly not covering everybody yet. So I think that one of the important principles in thinking about the use of this money is not to reinvent the wheel, not to go out and say, we have to figure out from scratch how to make this happen and, you know, what works to alleviate poverty, what works to rebuild neighborhoods, what works to reduce crime. There are a lot of tested strategies out there. So I think it's going to involve building on best practices, not just programs that exist in our community, but best practices that have been used elsewhere, and then bringing them into our community at scale so they really reach everybody, dare I say everybody, who needs them, which would be really something quite new in the delivery of social programs in our community. So that's kind of one important guiding set of principles.
The city wants to raise $500 million by 2019 to get this foundation fully operational, off the ground, whatever words you want to use there. Is that a big lift?
The fundraising?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think they would be committing to do it if they thought it were impossible to do. So I certainly think it's possible that the money is out there to support that. The question is whether that money is being drawn away from other important resources in our community, whether there's that kind of displacement effect or whether this is going to represent some new philanthropic resources coming into our community. And I think we all hope that it's the latter.
Is Kalamazoo maybe a little different place than some other cities in terms of the generosity, the resources available to start something like this that maybe another city might not be in quite the position to do what Kalamazoo is trying to accomplish here?
I think it may be. I encounter people all the time who say about the Kalamazoo Promise, well, we can't do that here. We don't have anonymous billionaires who can fund it. We don't have the resources here. But in reality, almost 100 communities have set up some kind of place-based scholarship program inspired by the Kalamazoo Promise. Most of them are not as generous as the Promise. They are different in structure, but they're really trying to accomplish the same thing based on the local assets that they do have deployed in strategic ways in response to their local needs. So I think maybe a few years ago, I would have said, oh, no, other people won't be able to do this. But having seen this kind of experimentation that's gone on with the place-based scholarship model, I'm thinking, you know, maybe communities would be able to innovate in similar ways with different sources of money, different levels of money. We have a unique opportunity here in Kalamazoo. We can model social change and what it means to be a progressive, inclusive, economically successful community at the local level. I think when the Kalamazoo Promise donors created the Kalamazoo Promise, they had no idea that the Kalamazoo Promise was going to become a model for communities elsewhere. And I don't think that was part of their goal. I think they feel the same way about this as well. But in reality, if we do this well, if we do this work effectively, we certainly could become a model for other communities.
So why do you believe it's the case that Kalamazoo is in this position where they are turning to private donations? And we should note here that there are other cities which are also facing financial struggles. How did we reach this point?
Well, we have, as a city, struggled financially, as have other cities in Michigan and in many, many other states, particularly in the upper Midwest and northeastern parts of the country, where we have faced challenges around demographic decline and out-migration from the region. But we have more specific reasons for why we are in trouble. One reason that is, at least in our region, quite specific to Kalamazoo relative to its suburbs, is that the city of Kalamazoo contains a high proportion of tax-exempt property. I'm sitting on the campus of Western Michigan University. The colleges, the museums, the concert halls, the churches, the nonprofit organizations, the tax-exempt organizations are clustered in the city, although they serve the region. What that does is it takes a big chunk of land, about a third, just under a third of usable land, out of the property tax equation. And that means that the homeowners in the city of Kalamazoo, of which I am one, pay extra high taxes for the privilege of living in this urban core. And it's especially tricky because you can live any number of places and be quite close to the urban core, but not pay the city of Kalamazoo taxes. So that's a special problem, but that is certainly not the only problem we face. We share a problem with other municipalities throughout the state of Michigan, which is a quite dramatic decline in transfers from the state to localities. This is a problem that's been going on for probably about 20 years. The number of people who work for the city of Kalamazoo has fallen by a third over the past 20 years at a time when the need for city services has gone up. If you've noticed crumbling sidewalks, the crack in the bottom of the public swimming pool, other kinds of infrastructure challenges in our community, it's that we have really been facing a very, very tight fiscal situation made more challenging by some legislative actions at the state level, as well as the 2007-2008 recession. And so part of a really important part of this Foundation for Excellence, probably the most immediate part, is going to be a property tax abatement, a reduction in property taxes of about 37% city property taxes for homeowners, as well as trying to catch up a little bit with those infrastructure shortfalls that we've been experiencing, things like parks, safer streets, neighborhood infrastructure.
You mentioned that in order for the Foundation for Excellence to succeed in the way people wanted to, there have to be some other things around it, sort of, you know, separate from that, in the way that the Kalamazoo Promise spurred things to help students, you know, prepare for college that were not really part of the initial program. So what are some things that, you know, the city of Kalamazoo and maybe even communities outside Kalamazoo might be thinking about here to make sure that this donation, this foundation has the intended effect?
Right. This is something that I usually call alignment, and it's really hard. Sometimes it's even harder than getting the money, getting the alignment. So it's important that the Foundation for Excellence align with and build on other initiatives that are that exist in our community, and that it build on existing networks and tap into resources in our community that are already doing a lot of this work. So one of the challenges is that some of those organizations and networks that are doing the work are not based purely in the city. So I'm thinking about Southwest Michigan First that works on business attraction to the region, the Kalamazoo River Valley Trail that's been working a lot on recreational opportunities in the county and, in fact, in the entire watershed region, Kalamazoo Valley Community College, which is headquartered outside the city but is a really important player for economic development in the city. There's going to need to be a way for this money to be used to support city priorities, but that leverage what's already happening on the ground, and that is going to have important spillover benefits to the region. Issue that I think is challenging. There are two other issues that I think are going to be challenging. One is that you don't want the Foundation for Excellence to be used solely for these short-term fixes, for catching up with infrastructure spending. So some of these longer-term investment policies where you're not just fixing roads, but you're actually investing in families' ability to be self-sufficient, children's ability to be successful in school, good health outcomes for families in the community, positive neighborhood change. Those are longer-term strategies. So I think that short-term, long-term balance is going to be important. I do want to mention that one of the things that is guiding the City Commission in thinking about how to spend the money is a process that has already been underway in our community, which is called the Imagine Kalamazoo 2025 process, which involves these very open convenings of people in the community to come together and really envision what they want the future of their community to look like. And that process, which started before this donation, is quite intentionally being used to guide decision-making by the City Commission. So I see that as a real positive. You need to be open to participation and buy-in and ideas that bubble up from the community, while at the same time being strategic and intentional in the use of funds. And again, that's quite a hard balance to strike. I mean, I would love to see, as part of this money down the road, a really low-barrier mini-grant program where people with ideas in communities, in neighborhoods, could come and get a small grant to try something in their community. And not process-heavy, not top-heavy, but a way of really allowing people in different parts of the community to feel invested in what is happening. Yeah, so those are just kind of some ideas. I think it's important to remain really transparent about how decisions are made, how funds are being used. I hope that a lot of money won't go to hiring outside consultants. That's a tendency in our community, and I don't think it has served us particularly well. So those are some things that I hope the city commissioners who are listening will take to heart.
You noted that one of the similarities between this and the Kalamazoo Promise is that the donors don't seem to be hands-on. But at the same time, we do know the initial $70 million is coming from Bill Johnston and Bill Parfit. And is there a legitimate concern that now, since we know who these people are, that anything they say in a public setting, Bill Johnston's on, you know, the Board of Trustees here at Western Michigan University leading the search for the next president, that if he says something offhand in a public setting, someone may hear it and they may say, oh, well, I think Bill Johnston wants us to do this, even if that's not his intention and even if he's not trying to drive things that way. Does that perhaps influence this in ways that are not intended and may not be the leading us towards a desired outcome.
I think that's a great point, and I think that is the point that some of the commissioners who had their reservations about this gift, one of the things that they were concerned about. But I don't know if this makes people feel better or worse. I would say that people probably were paying a lot of attention to what Bill Johnston and Bill Parfet were saying before the Foundation for Excellence donation. We know who in this community has money. We know that money often correlates with seats on boards and an outsized role and influence in the community. And I would say, I would say compared to some other communities that I've lived in and looked at, our donors are a pretty low-key bunch. They don't really go out a lot and say, here's my money and this is what I want. They do have influence when they want to get something done. They have, privileged avenues through which to get that done. But I'm not sure that this particular donation really changes that landscape that much.
I want to note that you have been working on a study comparing philanthropy in Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids, which is to be released sometime in the near future. I'm just wondering if this particular donation and the effort to launch the foundation tells us something that kind of fits in with that overall picture of how philanthropy works in Kalamazoo.
I think it does. I mean, it changes a little bit some of the patterns that we've seen in the past in Kalamazoo. We haven't seen a lot of philanthropic investment in Kalamazoo in infrastructure. We don't have buildings that donors paid for and that bear people's names. To the extent that buildings are named in Kalamazoo, they tend to be these sort of honorific names. The new medical school is named after Homer Stryker, and the downtown campus is named after W.E. Upjohn. Neither of them are alive.
But the family of Homer Stryker. Right. His descendants provided a large contribution that allowed that to be built.
Yes. And they also, I believe that the building was purchased from MPI
for
a dollar,
right?
So, but if you look historically at recent history of philanthropic efforts to revitalize Kalamazoo, they haven't been largely infrastructure driven. They tend to be a little bit more educational, health industry, human capital type investments. And this donation is a little different because it is going to be used to make up for some of those infrastructure shortfalls that we've experienced in Kalamazoo. So, you know, it changes the complexion a little bit. The fact that the donors are not anonymous, cannot be anonymous, does raise some of these issues about influence and conflicts of interest, which I'm not as worried about as some people, but I do understand the challenges that come up, and I think the donors understand them as well. But I think this idea of investing local wealthy individuals who have stayed local, who've made their money locally, and whose economic fortunes rest on the future of the city of Kalamazoo, investing in making their community a better place, not just for their own economic interests, but because they live here. And this is a place they care about, and at least part of their families live here. I think philanthropy often blends both self-interested and altruistic motives together.
Enlightened self-interest.
Enlightened self-interest and you know, pure goodness as well. There are lots of other things these people can spend their money on. So I think we're uniquely fortunate to have people with a lot of money and a connection to this community and a long time horizon, not looking for immediate returns. I think that long view is essential to both this Foundation for Excellence, but also to the Kalamazoo Promise.
Michelle Miller-Adams, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Gordon.
Michelle Miller-Adams is a research fellow at the Upjohn Institute for Employment Research in Kalamazoo and a political science professor at Grand Valley State University. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.